Okay, you're listening to Green Left Radio, 3CR, and on the line we have Divya Garg, who is a student from Lucknow, Uttar Pradesh in India, where many of her family and friends live. And currently she is a PhD student slash scholar in media and communications and a sessional tutor as well, and she joins us today. So welcome to the program, Divya.
Hi, thanks for having me here.
Well, I guess to maybe start off, I guess the discussion is, you know, we're horrified, I guess, to hear about this massive kind of second wave of COVID in India, which is ripping through small towns. And of course, we know hospitals and crematoriums have run out of space. And I guess, what can you, I guess, comment about, I guess, the chaos and the trauma that is currently being faced by the people? And I guess some of the issues that have kind of been popped up as a result of this.
Right. It's like you said, despite a year, what is known as the second wave has just like struck the country very unprepared, and the cases are like rising like anything. And so the official reports are that there are over 300,000 daily cases of COVID infections and more than 200,000 deaths overall. But these are also massively underreported because right now there's no testing happening because they've run out of kits to test that. And states are also controlling the number of cases being reported. And in many cases, they're actually covering up crematoriums and hiding the number of the actual number of dead people to sort of play the false narrative that there are not as many deaths as people are claiming to be, except that people are talking and sharing stories amongst themselves about how everyone is losing people in their own families, immediate families, to this particular thing. And it's not that they're dying because of COVID. It's they're dying because of lack of resources, because the public health infrastructure is so poorly done. People are dying because there's no oxygen, there's no medicines, there are no doctors to administer life support. And so it's entirely a man-made disaster in the sense that the central government, the BJP, has not been prepared for it at all. And even now, in many cases, they have continued to hold election rallies and events like religious pilgrimages, which have led to mass infections in places where more than 300,000 people are gathering together. It's very hard to describe, like, because I saw in many newspapers how people have called it an apocalypse, that if the apocalypse had a face, it would be how people in India are right now. So it is officially reported that one person is dying of COVID every 5 minutes, and the actual numbers are probably even higher. So perhaps per every 2 minutes, someone is dying of that. And so it is chaos and trauma, like you call it, and it's very hard.
Proceed, I guess, to the next kind of question, because one of the kind of things that's been happening, I guess, is this whole question of vaccination. And I know, for example, for my partner, at least her parents have in India have gotten the vaccine. But on that whole context, the Indian government, from my knowledge, is entirely dependent, I guess, on two manufacturers, the Serum Institute of India and Bharat Biotech. And of course, both are being allowed to roll out two of the most expensive vaccines in the world to the poorest people of the world. And right now, that one of the more interesting sort of announcements is they announced that they will be selling these vaccines to private hospitals at a slightly elevated price, and then to state governments at a somewhat lower price. And of course, the idea that that a country should be at the whim, should actually have to pay for vaccines, I think is quite ridiculous, and it means that these companies, I think, stand to make a massive profit. And of course, one of the things, really, it seems to me that within India, that the main underlying impetus of the vaccination campaign, because really the only, it seems to me the only, one of the few solutions would be, to actually deal with this would be the vaccination. And I guess, what do you kind of see, what your comments, I guess, on some of these dynamics?
Right. You're entirely correct in the privatization of vaccines and the fact that these are being overpriced and sold back to the people who are the poorest. And this obviously creates a massive class divide because who can afford these? In fact, it's horrifying how they actually promised an election in one of the recent state elections that they held in Bengal that the BJP said that they would actually offer free vaccines if they were voted for, which is ridiculous because vaccines should be free for everyone and not a campaign promise. And so it is most definitely unimaginable the kind of privatization of vaccines that has happened and how it is being sold at such high prices. In fact, like the fact that we're running out of oxygen has also become such a class issue now because so oxygen is also being sold and made available at extremely high prices. And so it literally means death for the poor sooner because they cannot afford these amenities and services, which are the basic right and necessity of every human being. So, yeah, it is very ridiculous. And it is the result of the privatization of the health sector, which is completely failing and has failed in India.
And I think I'll just want to make a quick comment that, you know, the Australian government is also completely complicit because the Australian government has actually been consistently voting against waivers on vaccine intellectual property, which is actually preventing India from being able to have the capacity to be able to produce its own vaccine. So I think, yeah, it's the Australian government. I just want to note that the Australian government is actually quite complicit in this whole crisis that's happening in India right now. But then going into, I guess that goes right into sort of the next question. And this is sort of something a bit, when I was sort of reading about the crisis, this is sort of something that shocked me a bit. Of course, I've always sort of had the acknowledgement that the Modi regime is basically a Hindu kind of fascistic kind of regime. But one of the sort of interesting comments is the Modi regime is like literally telling 1.3 billion people not to complain. There's these all examples of, I guess, of media and repression and gaslighting of people who are actually criticizing the Indian government response to COVID-19. And, you know, there's now over 200,000 COVID-19 deaths in India. And the Modi-aligned Indian media outlets are basically just sort of saying, well, the COVID-19 has collapsed our healthcare system. But of course, the question is, this so-called system they keep talking about barely existed to begin with. And I guess I want to sort of hear your comments on your criticism of what the Modi government has actually done in response to this crisis.
Right. Well, in terms of the reporters, most definitely what you call gaslighting, that is definitely going on. And even more than that, so like the Solicitor General said that people who are asking for oxygen are being crybabies. And the BJP government in my state arrested someone for actually requesting for help because they were rumor mongering, apparently, according to them. They're reporting hospitals who are saying that they're running out of oxygen and reporting shortages of certain equipment because they're like, but everything is normal. And so they're actually threatening hospitals and people who are sharing help and sources on social media instead of actually doing anything to help. They're actively contributing to the worsening of the situation right now. Of course, they were massively underprepared, but at this point, I would say that they are actually actively contributing to murders. I would say it is genocide because they are completely and entirely responsible for what is happening there. And, for instance, they have not halted this 20,000 crore Central Vista project, which has been cited under essential services. And so they're continuing with, like, what they call development activities, and which take so much money. This one particular fund that was collected last year, which is known as the PM CARES, there was no audit allowed on that. It was technically for the pandemic by the citizens' money, apart from the taxes that they pay. And even then, no one knows what happened to that money or what's even being done to it now because they did not allow it to be transparent. So yeah, in every way possible, they are actively, completely complicit in what is going on. And on top of that, they're actually gaslighting their citizens by saying you are falsifying that people are dying or or that things are so bad and things are not that bad, except that they are. They're so bad. It's just like, like, I don't know anyone who's not, like, at least had an immediate family member being infected and in many cases lost to COVID.
And I guess one quick comment I guess I wanted to sort of make is I remember it was quoted in the article. In an article I read recently, that basically Modi was early on, before this whole crisis, had happened, was actually bragging about how successful, India's response to kind of COVID-19, was. And of course, I do remember that actually India had probably one of the worst sort of lockdowns, because basically they locked down the entire country with not notice. And of course I support lockdowns as a measure to contain COVID. But of course in the case of India, it was definitely one of the worst implemented ones. And in fact, it was also raised a lot of issues, especially with the issues of migrant labour and those who didn't necessarily work in traditional sort of urban kind of jobs. I guess the next kind of question, and we're sort of running a bit out of time, is what can you tell us about how this crisis has personally impacted you and others, like here in Australia, who have family and friends overseas? There have been a lot of stories coming out of the news about friends and relatives searching for beds and oxygen tanks through social media. And, of course, union students are asking universities to defer fees so the money can be used to help family back home overwhelmed by COVID-19.
I can just give my own example perhaps to shed some light on that. Because I am also here, I feel very helpless and frustrated, not being able to do anything and just seeing everything. And so I had a very close friend, my housemate's partner actually, who was, infected, and he couldn't even get tested. And then we spent like 12 hours trying to call every hospital in Delhi to get him a hospital bed. Once his oxygen levels dropped drastically, and so it was very, very difficult to be able to do that. And on top of that, I keep getting other bad news. So my grandfather has also tested positive. My brother-in-law is also exhibiting COVID symptoms, and my sister is 6 months pregnant. I don't know what to do about it. I have been trying to pay the medical expenses of friends who caught and to sort of share links about where they can find certain things. But at the end of the day, I just don't know what to do and what is helpful and what is not. And I obviously cannot do enough. So there is an overall very helpless, stressed, frustrated sort of feeling. And yeah, like, I don't know what to say. I wish I could go back, but that is not possible at this point. And it would be, and even worse, as an international student who is in my last year of PhD, I would not be able to come back. So then, and at this point, of course, I'm not even thinking, I don't want to think about that anymore, because I'm like, fuck my PhD, I just want to go. But yeah, so all of that is definitely at the back of, not even at the back of my mind, at the forefront of my mind. And like, yeah, that is how it is.
Well, thanks very much for that, Divya. I think you've given a very kind of good kind of, because I think it's very important, I think especially in terms of 3CR, to actually hear from the voices of people who are affected by these recent kind of political developments and crisis and this health crisis that's happening in India right now. And do you have, I guess, any final comments you'd like to kind of make?
Well, I mean, I don't know, and this probably sounds idealistic at this point, but the only thing that has given me, well, I wouldn't say hope, but like, I guess some sort of strength at this point, is to see common people's responses to this. Obviously, our government has entirely failed us, and by government, all the governments all around the world whether in terms of not allowing resources or patenting, and which just shows me how colonialism was never over. It's just become different. And the idea of third world nations hides the fact that these are previously colonized nations who do not have the resources in the first place because of imperialism, because of colonialism. But all of that aside, the one thing that does give me strength is how common people have sort of come together. In many cases, people at the risk of their own lives are arranging for things and going around and helping, whether it is the Dalit people who are largely responsible for cremating the bodies with who are doing so. And it is sad. Of course, they shouldn't have to. But the fact that it is the common people helping each other at this point, I know it just sounds... After this whole thing, I just wanted something to sort of end on, and that's the only thing, like, when I tell my students, I hear from them, and I think that's the only faith I have in humanity left anymore, that these people want to do better. And so I don't know if that helps, but perhaps that's the final note, yeah.
No, I think that's all good. Thank you very much, Divya, for being on our program again.
Thank you for having me here.
Thanks. Divya. And yeah, I hope your grandfather is okay. It's pretty disturbing to hear of your helplessness. So.
Yeah.